It's no secret that we here at JerryPark.com consider ourselves the Coliseum of Combat Sports. And while we love to cover mixed martial arts and boxing as well as pro wrestling, one particular pro wrestling organization that we've been focusing on a lot lately has been Ring of Honor. And we always get emails from readers and listeners asking us about Ring of Honor because they're fairly new to the fight game and to the world of wrestling. So we wanted to invite Aaron Glazer, one of the top writers at Inside Pulse Wrestling, to talk to us a little bit about the history of the promotion, what they're all about, and why we think mixed martial arts and boxing fans would love Ring of Honor more so than what WWE and TNA put out there each and every week. So first off, Aaron, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we heard that you're a sort of savant on all things ROH. So we hope to teach everyone a bit about this up-and-coming young promotion. So let's go way back and start from the beginning. How did Ring of Honor come about? Where did this whole idea of starting a new promotion based out of Pennsylvania start?
Well, Rob Feinstein, the guy who ran RF Video, he did all the shoot interviews and he decided to start his own promotion. So since they had such a well-developed name because of the shoot style, the shoot interviews, they went on and started a promotion. They already had a name developed and a lot of top indie workers willing to work for them. Early on, they just started running a couple of small shows, but initially, they got Eddie Guerrero, which immediately, you know, made them serious during his short time fired from the WWF. And when they started shows, they immediately got Chris Daniels, who was sort of a holdover from the late 90s indie scene, and they got Loki and Brian Danielson, who had just tore up the ECWA Super 8, and they immediately put on a classic match. And as soon as they began, they just seemed to be like an all-star of the indies where they just got everyone's best guy and put them together. It turns out that that led to a lot of putting the best against the best and not a lot else underneath. So over time, they stopped that. But initially, it was just, let's see all the best guys from around the indies and see them competing against each other in the best matches we can. And getting Loki, Danielson, and Daniels right off the bat, and soon after, guys like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe immediately made them, you know, putting on absolutely great matches immediately.
Now, what year are we talking about here when all these things started to come into motion?
This is 2002.
And that would coincide with the fall of WCW as well as ECW, which they seem to sort of cater to the same kind of audience. Do you think that the reason why the guys over at RF Video, Rob Feinstein in particular, was that the reason why they decided to start ROH because of the fall of ECW and that now that marketplace really had nothing to cater to those fans?
Well, there was absolutely a void. And WWF at the time, I suppose, would go through periods where they offer almost no wrestling and there's just an audience for it, for people that want to see something different, that want to see people actually go out there and have a competitive match, see what guys are capable of. That audience wasn't catered to. ECW did it, and to a lesser extent, even with the Cruiserweights, WCW did it. But besides, I believe 2002 was the SmackDown 8, eventually, later in the year. But besides that, WWF wasn't focusing on wrestling to the same extent. And there was just the market for it. And as soon as they put it out there, it immediately became a success.
Now, Rob Feinstein is no longer with the company. The owner of Ring of Honor is Kari Silken, a man that we've interviewed on JerryPark.com. Interesting story how Rob sort of got out of the business. Give for those that don't know about it, give us a lowdown on what happened to Rob Feinstein.
Well, quickly, Dateline caught him as someone who was an online predator for underage boys trying to meet them online. And as soon as he was caught, it was obviously a huge scandal, and ROH almost closed. He had to sell the company and cut all ties with the company. And just basically no one wants to work with him, no one wants to associate with him. ROH won't even mention him anymore. It's probably the quickest way to get banned on their message board.
And is he still in any way associated in the wrestling world?
I believe RF Videos is back, but it's generally ignored. No one seems to want to give him their money.
So RF Video and Ring of Honor, there's no relation between the two right now?
Not at all.
And so Rob Feinstein gets involved in this mess. Obviously, it's something that any organization, any company out there would not want to be associated with. Was there ever thought of closing down Ring of Honor and kind of starting new? Because naturally, the name would have been, you know, dragged through the mud through all this, and it surely was. And guys maybe would have thought twice about working for the promotion. Was there any chance that the company would have had to close shop after this scandal?
They absolutely almost did close shop. The big reason, besides obviously the bad publicity, was TNA refused to be associated with the scandal and immediately pulled all their guys. So guys like AJ and Daniels, who were a really big part of the company to that point, were suddenly just gone. Raven was around, I believe, still a bit to that point, and he was gone. And these are guys in huge programs at the top of the card, and suddenly they were just pulled. And so was a lot of ROH's drawing power at the time. So luckily for them, they actually shut down for a little bit, and they relaunched with what they called a reborn era, where they pushed Samoa Joe, CM Punk, and Homicide, basically that trio, a few other guys, but those were the big three, to the moon. And with their push, well, we know what happened to the three of them. They became some of the best in the world and just grew to amazing length, to amazing heights. But if they had didn't have Joe and Punk, it's almost guaranteed that they wouldn't have made it.
Now, when ROH first started out, they were very big on something called the Code of Honor, and I think that's maybe something that a lot of MMA fans or boxing fans of real combat sports, so to speak, would be interested in. What exactly is the Code of Honor, and do they still use that today?
The Code of Honor went through several iterations, but the main thing was shaking hands before matches. No sneak attacks, no harming the referee, and matches must have a winner or a loser. Originally, the surest way to become a heel in ROH was to refuse to follow the Code of Honor, which is how Chris Daniels ended up a huge heel. Eventually, Homicide took that much further, just basically initiating gang warfare. But the Code of Honor isn't followed today, but it's extremely rare when a match won't have a winner or a loser. I don't think a run-in has ever ended a match in ROH. Everything like that is kept to after matches. There's clear winners and losers. The Code of Honor is still followed by almost everyone. Besides Chris Hero, I can't think of anyone on the active roster that doesn't shake hands. So the Code of Honor is followed. It's not a good guy, bad guy thing so much as it is a consistent character thing. The guy on top right now, well, not the champion, but Fulton's purpose of the ace, Bryan Danielson, is a face at the moment, but as soon as he's wrestling a pure face, he immediately moves over to working heel. It's whatever fits in his personality, and the characters are diverse enough that works out well. The Code of Honor makes sure that the silliness and character don't go over the top almost, where everything is given a reason in-ring. It's as much as it is something to like guarantee respect, it guarantees good storytelling because you can do a lot with just who has honor in the ring without having to do a bunch of outside stuff.
Now, aside from the fact that the action in the ring is so real, I mean, it's probably the most hard-hitting and fast-paced and most exciting action of any of the top wrestling promotions in North America, at least. That's one of the things we love about it the most. The fact that there are no BS run-ins, no DQs, just none of the nonsense that you're used to seeing, especially in TNA and WWE. I'm not sure if you watch those other shows, TNA, WWE in particular, but if you do, how frustrating is it for someone who follows Ring of Honor so closely to see them have these great former Ring of Honor stars yet not use them to their full capabilities and have to rely on these bogus finishes such as the run-ins and the DQs?
Paul London might be the most talented worker in the world right now. He's absolutely amazing what he can do in the ring. He's the closest we've got to a modern-day Ricky Steamboat, and he's wasted as in a tag team that does nothing, that gets no TV time. It's amazingly frustrating to watch that happen. Just, I don't understand it. I mean, he doesn't even need a heavyweight push. He's got these guys that are around his size competing for the IC title, but he gets no time. He's a solid promo. Spanky's, or Brian Kendrick, isn't as good in the ring, but he's not that far off, and he's a very good promo, and he has charisma, and nothing is done with either of them. That's beyond frustrating. Punk, as many know, was in ROH, and when he first came to WWE, he was sent to OVW for about a year. That's ridiculous. He was better than 85%, 90% of their roster, and they sent him to train him for next to no reason. They're currently doing the same thing with Matt Sydal and Colt Cabana and Ace Steel, who actually trained Cabana and Punk. It just doesn't make sense. If they're not trained by you, that doesn't mean they weren't trained. I mean, WWF didn't train Bret Hart. They didn't train Shawn Michaels, but it's not like they insisted on training regimens for them for a year before they could appear on TV either. I'll still take that over what TNA does. TNA has probably the best roster their roster is amazing. And they can't even have a good match 90% of the time. It's just, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they're doing. It's crazy. It's just, 1 week something's going on, then it's dropped and it's twisted around. And they've got a small roster. It's not like they're running a million house shows and they have a million things going on where they shouldn't be able to tell a consistent story. But the easiest example is Joe. What are they doing with Joe? 1 week he's fighting Christian, and he can't stop beating on him. The next week, all of a sudden, he's the outsider's mystery partner. Then he's shooting on Nash with no on-screen reason given. Then it's just, and now that's going to be a storyline. It's just some minor consistency. It's gotten so bad that Joe doesn't even seem to have any passion in the ring anymore. It looks like he doesn't care. I mean, Shelley and Sabin are wildly over. They're the top merch sellers. Why were they not pushed for most of the year? Why were they ignored? Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it just, TNA doesn't make any sense, and I can't watch it. I can stomach WWE when I have to. I can't take TNA.
So you actually don't watch either WWE or TNA on a regular basis?
More WWE lately. I've been trying, just honestly, mostly for writing's sake. But it's frustrating, and I think the last time I gave TNA a crack was about a month ago. I think I watched like 3 impacts in a row. It was amazingly frustrating and gave up again.
Yeah, it's a sad statement on the current wrestling scene in North America when a guy such as yourself who loves the business so much can't even watch two of the big time promotions around. You touched on something that I thought was really interesting. Samoa Joe, you know, losing his passion. I think it's very clear when you compare it to when he first came to TNA, not the same guy at all out there, not the same fire for a whole host of reasons that we could touch on. But when he was in ROH, it seemed as though this was a guy that was going to develop into one of the biggest stars of our generation. Much like ECW used to do. I mean, develop these guys that you never heard of or might have heard of as smaller in a smaller organization, and then build them up, focusing on their strengths and building them up into huge stars. At the same time, you look at ROH and ECW, they're similar but very different in many ways. What would you say is the biggest difference between Ring of Honor and the former ECW? And of course, I'm not talking about the new version of WWE.
That's just the WWE show. But as far as old ECW, the main similarity, it's easier to go over the similarities because the main similarity is they're giving wrestlers that no one else will a shot, and they have a loyal, rabid fan base. Both tell original and consistent stories, but besides that, the way they go about that is almost entirely different. A ton of ECW is based on Out of the Ring with, like, Sandman's son, this and the other thing, and Raven with his random cults and so on. And it all made perfect sense, and it was good storytelling, but the focus wasn't in the ring, at least for the heavyweight division, for a long time. ROH always keeps the focus in the ring. ECW also had a lot more hardcore. ROH seems, this year anyway, wasn't always this way, but ROH seems to try and have at least one, like, mini brawl around the building per show. ECW is pretty much all that, and ROH uses a lot less weapons, which is good considering what we're learning about all the concussions now.
So that said, 5 years into their existence, ROH I'm talking about, and then you compare them, ECW, their first 5 years, which company do you think right now is in a better position? I mean, obviously ECW no longer around, but do you think that ROH is progressing at the right amount of speed and pace that to actually become a viable number three in North America, or are they always going to stay at, you know, just below where they can be considered a top-notch competitor?
I think ROH is actually in a really good position, mostly because they don't seem to be trying to grow outside their means like ECW often did. ECW did national expansion before they were ready. ROH doesn't push that. ECW had a lot harder product to swallow for the masses than ROH does. Lance Storm, the Observer, the other day said that he could completely follow the ROH storylines just from watching one pay-per-view and knew what was going on. That kind of accessibility doesn't come everywhere. And even in ECW, it was just like, who are these people, these convoluted storylines, and what's going on? ROH is amazingly easy to jump onto, and there's been rumors for a while of a Versus Network TV show, and that would even make it easier to catch on. But ECW was never going to be that viable because they're so violent and because they had no patience. ROH has patience, and they've toned down the violence while still keeping the intensity enough so that they can appeal to a lot of people and grow, as long as they don't rush it.
You know, you mentioned the Versus Network rumor. I've actually never heard of that, which I don't know if that exposes me as not being in the know for ROH enough, but can you elaborate a bit more on any talks? Because now that you mention it, it seems as though it would be a natural fit versus trying to propel itself as a network that shows a lot of combat sports and sort of like Spike TV Light for now. And, you know, ROH, which puts on a great in-ring product, to me, it sounds like a great idea.
Every so often, a little blurb shows up in the Observer that talks are still in, that talks are still ongoing between ROH and Versus. And nothing seems to be coming of it, but that's what we thought about pay-per-view. So the blurbs keep showing up, and one would assume that, like, if they're still discussing things, progress is actually being made. When? Your guess is as good as mine. ROH basically threatens to fire anyone who reveals any of those secrets, so we'll never know until they make the announcement. But when it happens, it can be really big, and as long as they get a decent time slot and decent promotion, there's no reason that they can't be bigger than TNA.
Yeah, absolutely. And earlier this summer, ROH made its pay-per-view debut, and for a long time it seemed as though they weren't interested in pay-per-view. They always said that they were happy with the DVD sales and everything that came with that, and then all of a sudden they're now having pay-per-views every 2 to 3 months. What do you think of their first foray into the pay-per-view world? We'll get to Man Up in just a second, but thus far in terms of production values, in terms of how they're presenting a 2-hour show for anywhere between $10 and $15, what are your thoughts on the first couple of the first few ROH pay-per-views?
The production values need work right off the bat. They just do. They're a small indie and they're still learning how to put together a proper pay-per-view for mass consumption. That was really clear on the first pay-per-view where they, I guess they had the brightness turned up a bit high and the ring sort of ate a few wrestlers. It was just really strange. Their mic quality can be better. It can be easier to hear guys at their shows. But beyond that, I mean, if you are going to watch or buy an indie fed, you kind of know what you're getting. And they are really quickly improving to the point where if you watch Man Up after you watch Respect Is Earned, which would be their first pay-per-view, you'd almost not realize it's the same company. The first pay-per-view had, I think, something like 3 great matches. Absolute incredible stuff, stuff you won't see anywhere else. But it all felt exhibition-y, like it was very much an introduction. And I'm not sure that was the best course to take, because I sent it around to a lot of people. A lot of our writers hadn't tried ROH. I finally convinced them to order the pay-per-view, and they were just kind of taken aback at, like, it felt, it didn't feel like a complete experience. ROH, as usual, has an amazingly quick learning curve, and their second pay-per-view ended up being what's probably going to win pay-per-view of the year. It didn't have as many great matches, but it felt like a unified show. It was no longer exhibition-y. It had what might be the match of the year. It was just so, it was so much improved that it was amazing. From the camera angles to everything, they didn't give you matches in isolation. They were building stories. They were building stories in-ring. They had proper promos without any awkwardness. Their growth, for whatever reason, they don't make the same mistake twice, which is just rare in the wrestling business because you see people trying to push things down a fan's throat a lot, looking at mostly WWE with that. But ROH quickly determines that, like, if something isn't working, they'll move on and not push it, particularly on pay-per-view, which is a very good idea because the crowd, the fans at home can hear what the fans in the building are saying, and that helps get them into the match. So if the crowd isn't into it, that guy doesn't need that big of a push.
Do you think they need to go live in terms of pay-per-views to make that next step, or are the, I mean, most of ROH's fans are on the internet, are internet fans. Do you think that in terms of really making impact in the next few months, next year or so, they actually have to present a live pay-per-view?
I think the whole internet fan thing is sort of overdone. I know, because of writing at Pulse Wrestling, I know a lot of internet writers, I know a lot of internet fans, and many of them just haven't tried ROH or are just trying ROH due to pay-per-view. I talk to a lot of people at shows, and while they might check the website occasionally to buy DVDs or tickets, that's the extent of their website interaction. ROH seems to be succeeding a lot by word of mouth, where someone will go to a show with a friend and then be like, oh my God, this is great, and they'll start telling the rest of their friends. And once that occurs, you have the growth. I think what ROH could probably do best would be a street team, someone to help spread flyers, spread the word. Because I've been people that aren't wrestling fans that are now going to every ROH show with me, and I think the contingent I bring with me is 10 for most shows and about like 15 for some. It's just people that don't care about wrestling that are just like, wow, this is just great fun. But live pay-per-view, most of the people that try it aren't that heavy into the internet. And if they are, it's not like ROH's WWE where you can't avoid spoilers. Live pay-per-view is big, but I think TV and actually finally getting their retail DVDs into major outlets, which they just did, are bigger steps than going live for pay-per-view. Because live for pay-per-view is really expensive. And if someone can wander into Best Buy and pick up a DVD for $15, especially if it has someone like Joe or Punk on the front, I think that does a lot more to spread the word.
All right, so just a week and a half ago, they presented their third pay-per-view installment, the Man Up Show, and a lot of people were billing that as the best pay-per-view of the year. We watched the show, loved it, great, great ladder match as a main event, and something you're not used to seeing from ROH in terms of that hardcore style. What did you think of the show, and would you cast it as a show of the year in terms of pay-per-views?
As far as match quality, it's tough to beat. The only real competition is the other ROH pay-per-view driven. As far as the show goes, I absolutely love that Danielson-Morishima match. I think it's getting really overlooked because it, as a pay-per-view match, the pay-per-view audience didn't have the opportunity to see Danielson and Morishima's first encounter, which is my match of the year, hands down, at this point. Just the series those two are having is off the charts. It's going to be the stuff of legends. I saw their third match live. I'll be seeing their fourth match live come December 29th. And it's really just the stuff of legends. This is stuff that's going to be talked about for a long time. The ladder match was absolutely insane. It's right up there with any of the TLC matches. I don't think it raises the bar the way people hyped it up. But that's really only a problem for the internet fans, because anyone who didn't get all that hype is just going to be blown away by it. Eric Stevens was made a star on the pay-per-view by Roderick Strong. That's always impressive. Aries continued to come off like a huge star, which is especially good because, I don't want to spoil it, but big things are in store. So that entire pay-per-view came together incredibly well. Is it better than Driven? Not sure.
Okay, so you're talking to a lot of people that might not know a lot about ROH, some that will. Even so, it's still always interesting to hear from true fans. If you can give us maybe your top three matches in ROH history, and even if you can maybe add, and I might, this might be asking a little too much, but what DVDs these are found on, because as we mentioned, that's a huge portion of where ROH gets their revenue, DVD sales. So if you're speaking to the masses right now, what would you say were the top three greatest matches thus far in Ring of Honor history?
Okay, we'll go in chronological order first. And these aren't in order. You can put these three in any order as far as I'm concerned. First would be Joe versus Punk 2 from the DVD aptly titled Joe versus Punk 2. It's the second in the trilogy, obviously. It's a classic. It's, you can basically watch two stars being born, where they're great before, but they've never reached heights like that. And just learning from each other, two young guys, and Punk said it on a shoot interview, two young guys having a match that's probably better than two young guys in that position had any right to have. Joe had was dominant and basically killed everyone in under 20 minutes, and Punk's job, as far as he could see it, was to take Joe long and try and wear him out. It came after Joe versus Punk 1, which is an hour draw, and it's absolutely must-see. The second major match that I recommend to everyone, it's the one I use to get people into ROH when they ask, is Joe versus Kobashi. Again, the DVD has the same name. Kenta Kobashi at the time was hands down the best wrestler in the world. It's from 2005. He didn't do a lot, but what he did, absolutely everything counted. He throws the hardest chops, he gets the biggest pops, he has the flashiest offense, and he knows exactly when to do everything. Joe was trying to defend ROH, Joe was trying to defend ROH's home turf against him, but he kind of knew he wasn't up to the task, so Joe whips out a lot of Kobashi's old nemesis's move, where he uses some of Misawa's moveset, some of Kawada's moveset, a bit of Tenryu, just to try and take it to Kobashi, and just the crowd atmosphere is absolutely off the hook. The audience doesn't sit down the entire match. It's an amazing spectacle. Just even if you don't know the backstory, it's so rare, especially in the States, to see two big guys hitting each other that hard for that long. You will, if you see the match, you won't stop marking out for the entire show. And last is from Glory Banner 5 Night 2, my personal favorite match, Bryan Danielson against Kenta. Kenta was an unbeatable monster who had run through the roster and beat Danielson twice in non-title situations. Danielson was champion for more than a year and had separated his shoulder at the show before. With the separated shoulder, Kenta basically destroys him. It's an incredible match. It's not especially fast-paced, but it's made for those who miss classic wrestling, who miss guys who are going to go 25 to 40 minutes and just take their time and tell a perfect story where every move means something, every little nuance comes back. It's an amazing match. It's my favorite in ROH history.
All right, a pretty solid list. You just recently wrote an article on PulseWrestling.com kind of breaking down what ROH needs to do to take that big leap into being considered one of the top promotions in North America and the world. In a nutshell, I mean, you don't have to break it down for us step by step, but in a nutshell, what would you like to see Ring of Honor do to improve themselves in 2008 and beyond?
The big improvement would be advertising. Get the name out. There's just a ton of small ways they can improve their advertising. All over the internet, there's no reason they shouldn't have banners on various sites, wrestling and non-wrestling. There's no reason they shouldn't be trying to get some local radio spots here or there. They can get street teams. I mean, running a college or two, if you have one or two fans in a college, most ROH fans are kind of rabid, and they'd be happy to pass out hundreds of flyers. Just push the name. As soon as people hear of it and give it a try, they're hooked. So the idea is to just get them to get that first try.
All right, and finally, we've heard some rumors about Daniel Puter. MMA fans might know of him. He's fought on, in Strikeforce, and WWE wrestling fans might know of him due to him winning the Tough Enough competition a couple of years back. We read that Puter is going to be actually a guest at one of the upcoming ROH shows. Are you hearing anything in terms of a potential involvement with Puter? We think that this would be amazing for them if they can secure his services for some of their shows in the coming year. How real is it that Daniel Puter will be wrestling for Ring of Honor?
Rumors are, mostly from MMA sources, it seems that Puter's around for the year. He's sticking around for most of 2008. So that would be great, especially if he brings a work shoot style over. I don't know if many of your listeners are familiar, but if you ever can, UWFI, that's UWFI. It's an old Japanese promotion. They did work shoot. That's some of the most amazing stuff you'll ever see. It was basically pro wrestling presented as shoot fighting, but it was still worked, and just the kind of drama they built and the kind of matches they told were incredible. It sold out stadiums all through Japan. With the rise of MMA in America, there's no reason that ROH can't at least partially mimic some of that. A great hybrid between the two would be absolutely great, and I think Puter is the perfect guy to start that off.
Great stuff, Aaron. Again, PulseWrestling.com's Aaron Glazer, and for more on ROH, check out ROHWrestling.com, and you can check out all of Aaron's great commentary on Ring of Honor at PulseWrestling.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and you know, keep spreading the good word about Ring of Honor. We're definitely big fans of theirs.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the kind words.